This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast, sponsored by Cards Accepted. I'm Elliot Jackson and I'm joined, as always, by George Smith. Hello, George. How are you?
Hello, Elliot. How's things with you? A bit under the weather at the minute, to be honest. Got a bit of a cold, cough, cold. Usual sort of thing for this time of year, but aside from that, can't complain. Looking forward as ever to an hour in your company chatting about the greatest league on the planet.
Oh, isn't that sweet? Yeah, I'm in a decent mood. I'm on my Holly Bobs next week, so I'm excited. Me and my wife are going on our belated honeymoon to the United States, so looking forward to that. And looking forward to just leaving the madness of Blackburn Rovers and day-to-day life behind for a week or so, hoping that nothing chaotic's happened in the time I come back. But I want to start this week's pod slightly away from the pitch, and I want to talk about something that's been in the news a lot this week, which is a new deal for the EFL, talks with the Premier League. As you've probably seen a lot of articles in news outlets over the last couple of years almost at this point, since the independent regulator got approved and the white paper was passed, which was obviously after a fan-led review by MP Tracy Crouch. You'll have heard all about that. If you haven't, go and research it. I'm not going to go through all the back history of that. But basically, since that was approved, the Premier League obviously is very much against an independent regulator, says we can sort ourselves out. So the government has put the Premier League under pressure to strike a new deal for football, as it's being termed, with the EFL for the redistribution of funds. Now, we are a way down the line since this began, and still there has been no agreement reached. There was fresh talks this week. The Premier League, as I say, have been under a lot of pressure to strike this deal. The EFL wants somewhere in the region of 25% of media rights, which they have had historically. That was sort of how it was before the Premier League became the Premier League. They're currently in line at about 15% on deals being discussed, and I think somewhere in the middle of 19% would probably be acceptable. But the Premier League, 10 clubs, obviously for a legislation to be passed through, you need 14 votes from the 20 Premier League clubs to get it approved. And 10 of them have rejected the new proposal and threatened legal action. I'm not going to go through all 10 clubs, but they're available. It was the Mail Online that broke that story. So the likes of Forest, Liverpool, Aston Villa, all included in that list of 10. And leaves us at a bit of an impasse where the EFL is desperate for funds to obviously support their football clubs. You know, a lot of clubs came out of COVID, luckily, but certainly worse for wears. It could have been a lot worse than it was. And now it looks like unless a deal can be struck, then it's going to take the independent regulator to force things through. And it's just a sad state of affairs, isn't it, English football and where we're at. And I don't like people that go for the argument of, well, you don't see Tesco giving handouts for the local butchers. It's not the same. The English pyramid is what makes English football so great. It's why we love, you know, if we look at other countries, the depth of our football pyramid is what is the envy of the world, and the competitiveness, the promotion and relegation. And that without equal distribution of funds or a fairer distribution, then we're going to lose that. And we've seen that more and more where, as much as we love the Championship and as enthralling as the promotion race has been this season, three of the four clubs chasing automatic promotion were relegated from the Premier League last year. And it's a worry that without this being sorted out, that ultimately the Championship and the Championship will become more distorted, and further down the pyramid, clubs will go bust. We've seen so many examples of where fairer distribution of wealth would have saved a lot of clubs. You know, Bury went bust, Macclesfield went bust. We've seen Bolton go right to the brink. Reading, of course, are the prime example at the minute, although that is more to do with their owner being a massive knobhead, to be honest, rather than actually TV revenue. But if they were making more money and more revenue, then obviously that would certainly help that situation. But we've also seen, like, on the upper scale, like if you look at Derby and Sheffield Wednesday as recent examples, who've had points deductions and been relegated from the Championship as a result. They got into financial issues, both with financial fair play and administration, because they were chasing the golden goose to try and get to the Premier League. And that meant spending beyond their means to match the clubs that had parachute payments, spending that money very badly, it's worth saying as well. You know, this is not me, you know, crying for and getting my violin out for Derby and Sheffield Wednesday, but they're two examples of two historic clubs, two really big football clubs that had to spend way beyond their means to feel like they could compete with those with parachute payments. No one put a gun to their head to do that, but we want to avoid scenarios like that going forward, where there are teams that just feel like they have to really gamble and basically put it all on red, because when they don't and it comes up black, they end up in big financial trouble. And for me, it's quite clear that an independent regulator is way overdue in English football.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've summed that up really, really well. It's just a mess, isn't it? Let's be honest, it is a mess. We are seeing a widening gulf between the Premier League and the EFL now. And it's so important in this country that we have a pyramid that is sustainable. The bedrock of English football is from non-league right throughout League 2, League 1, Championship to the Premier League. And I'll be honest, and it's easy for me to say it, supporting a club that's never, in my lifetime anyway, never been in the Premier League. But I personally prefer watching the EFL. I prefer it. I feel it's more realistic. I think there's more enjoyment you can get out of it as a sort of a British football fan who goes to games, that tradition where it feels like you're embedded within that club. Whereas the Premier League, it's got more of a sort of corporate feel to it, more elite level feel to it. And don't get me wrong, as a supporter of a Championship club, I'd love to get into the big time. I'd love to see my club in the Premier League. But like they often say, the journey is often better than the destination. And I think that's what it would be with the Premier League. You've made a good point there about the three clubs who came down last year currently being within the top four of the Championship table. Of course, those teams, Southampton, Leeds, Leicester City, they've all done very, very well this season in terms of on-the-pitch performance. They've had to roll their sleeves up. They've had to get over the disappointment of relegation. But they were always going to have a better chance than, say, the other 21 teams of the division. And it's such a huge credit to Ipswich Town that they're in the shake-up with those other three at the moment. But I think a very stark warning was sounded this week by Peter Ridsdale, the Preston North End chairman, where he said, English football is finished if this deal can't be agreed. And that's quite a stark warning. That is a really big warning. Preston, obviously, one of the founding members of the EFL, one of the longest historic clubs in the country. It's a big, big worry. It really is, because we're seeing now that Premier League clubs are just becoming more and more obsessed with money, the greed that comes with it. We all remember the fiasco that was the European Super League 3 or 4 years ago, and the upheaval and the chaos that caused. And it was only because of the backlash from the supporters that they decided, in the end, to pull the plug. But it shows what they're striving for, the greed, the money, the hunger and the fame. Whereas clubs in the Championship, League One, League Two, many of them, certainly in Leagues One and Two, are striving just to keep afloat year on year. So it's really, really difficult. And the independent regulator, it needs to come in, whether the Premier League clubs like it or not. It's been needed for a long, long time. Gary Neville, obviously a former Manchester United player, but obviously invested in Salford City these days. He's been one of the main men calling for it over the years. So it's certainly clear it's needed and it is on its way. But Premier League clubs, to me, are just showing signs of just being thinking all about themselves. Certainly the ones who have voted, who were going to vote against it anyway. And I think Arsenal were among them. Liverpool, Forest, you mentioned. Don't think either of the two Manchester clubs were involved, which is quite surprising given their status in the world of football. But it's a real big mess. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's quite clear that the Premier League is not capable of governing itself. Everyone just acts in self-interest, and there has been a complete clear lack of common sense and unity from the very elite in Premier League. And a lot of those clubs were in the Championship in the EFL not that long ago, are funded by players that have come through the academies at EFL clubs, and most of the England squad is made up of players who have plied their trade in the EFL in one way or another. So I really, really hope that the independent regulator comes in, and I really hope a deal gets struck before that, because it's worth around £900 million to the EFL over 6 years at the moment, what's being proposed. So that would be a huge injection of cash.
Yeah, you've raised a good point with that. And just lastly on this, I think it's fair to say, obviously, the England squad's been announced today. We're recording this on Thursday evening. The EFL actually tweeted in response to the England squad announcement, just with a few numbers of the way that the EFL has played an important role, certainly down the years, in setting up this current England squad that Gareth Southgate's picked. 1,815 appearances between that England squad across the Championship, League One and League Two, 9 promotions, 17 players that squad Gareth Southgate's name made their professional debuts within the EFL. Another statistic to throw in there, 1,124 Championship appearances. And how many famous names within that England squad have played in the Championship in the past? Harry Kane, the captain, he had a loan spell at Leicester and Millwall. Jude Bellingham obviously came through the ranks at Birmingham City. Jordan Pickford, you remember him being on loan at Preston North End a few years ago. Ivan Toney playing in League One with Peterborough United. Ollie Watkins playing League Two with Exeter City not that long ago. So it just goes to show the EFL, as I've said, it is the bedrock. It's the heartbeat of English football. And ultimately, a lot of these Premier League clubs need to remember that. And yes, there might not be as much fame and glitz and glamour at this level, but it's one of the steepest traditions in this country. It is, like I say, it is the bedrock of English football. And I'm being honest, yes, we're a Championship podcast. If you like, think I'm saying it just for the sake of it, and I'm obliged to say it. But like I've often said to you privately, and maybe one or two times on this podcast, if I've got the choice, say on a Saturday, of watching a Championship game on the telly or a Premier League game on the telly, I pick the Championship every single time because it just means more to me. I feel it's more real and I feel there's more of a competitive edge to it. So yeah, the Premier League, it might attract the biggest and the best names, but the Championship, it has got a big, big part to play in forming English football and that rise to the Premier League. So these Premier League clubs need to be mindful and remember that.
Let's turn our attention to matters on the pitch. Watford have sacked Valerien Ismail in the aftermath of their 2-1 home defeat to Coventry City. It's another sacking at Watford. Ismail lasted longer than most. I'll leave a brief buzz at this point for you to insert your own gag. There was a statistic going around saying there's been more Watford managers than Dalai Lamas or some nonsense like that. So I'll leave you to insert your own gag at this point. But after 1-12 and no home wins since November, the writing's felt like it's been on the wall for a couple of weeks for Valerien Ismail, with reports basically saying his future was under threat last week already. Obviously losing again this time at home to Coventry hasn't helped his cause. It's been a really weird season at Watford because I think pre-season expectations were really low, probably the lowest they've been at Watford in recent history coming into the season. So I think there was a bit of positivity after 10 games or so where Watford, they didn't start brilliantly, but I think the performances were better than the points tally suggested. And then Watford, after sort of 15 games where they'd not quite got many points, but as I say, the performance has been quite encouraging. They gave him a contract extension, which is incredibly unlike Watford, but quite rare for any club in that scenario to do, in fairness. And then they went on a fantastic run. I remember them winning at Ewood Park after 2 late goals on the 23rd of December. And that marked a run where they'd picked up something like 22 points in 10 games. So automatic promotion form for a portion of the season towards Christmas. But then since that period, it's been a real struggle for them. Players just looking a bit disinterested. Ismail not really able to get the team to play the style of football he wants. The style's been a bit weird all season because he played a very extreme, you know, direct style at Barnsley and then tried to do so at West Brom as well. That didn't work. He was sacked at West Brom, it's worth remembering, while they were still in the top six. That was kind of over style. Rather than results. Barnsley, of course, who was incredibly successful. And then at Watford, they were sort of possession-based at first, and then it started to really click. And then we've never really seen him go full Val Ismail that we saw at Barnsley in particular. It's been a lot more possession-based, and it's not really worked for them. And it's hard to really know where they go from here. Obviously, Tom Cleverley is in as interim manager. They've got a tough run in, so they do need some points on the board to be sure of their Championship status. Currently 7 points above the drop zone with a very tough run in, so they are going to need to pick up some points. Birmingham away at the weekend, so that's potentially an opportunity to do so. But it's hard to know really what Watford's identity is right now, because they used to sack the managers and get results, and that's not been the case for a few years now. And it feels like they've sold a lot of the best players. João Pedro, Ismael Assar both went in the summer. And we're kind of looking, who's the next? What is Watford? Where are they? Are they? It feels like they're in a bit of an identity crisis at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Watford have always been a team when, say, they've dropped out of the Premier League, they've always been among the leading favourites to bounce back at the first attempt, haven't they? They've often been that team that you expect to be there or thereabouts, either in the top two race or in the playoff race. Whereas this season, and certainly since the last time they dropped out of the Premier League, they've not always been that side. They've sort of regressed a little bit in the sense that they've lost their way. And like you say, their identity has gone. They've not really got those star-studded attractions anymore, even though there are, of course, still some good technical players in that team individually, but not sort of at the level of João Pedro's and your Ismael Assar's. Being honest, Valerian Ismael, I've seen mixed comments from Watford fans in the past week or so. Some sort of saying it was the right decision, had to be done. One or two others sort of saying, bad patch of form, it happens. But there was a sense that he was sort of trying to implement a long-term plan at Watford, which is, of course, very unusual for Watford. I think when any team encounters such a disappointing run of form at this stage of the season, when you are beginning to have to look over your shoulder in the same way, obviously from a lower base in their case, but the way Millwall did, they've sort of had to look over their shoulders and maybe think, right, we're going to have to change this before we do get sort of sucked into immediate danger. And that could be the case that Watford have done that. They've only won once since winning at QPR on the 14th of January, which took them to 8th in the table. They've only won one game since then, and that was away at Rotherham, which kind of tells you everything. And Rotherham, of course, are in an absolute rut at the minute. But Watford, like you said, they've been on a really bad run. 3 defeats in the last 4 games now. I think it's 5 defeats in the last 7 as well. So it's really, really difficult to make a case in Valerian Ismael's defence that he deserves to keep his job in that sense. But in terms of a strategy moving forward for Watford, what do they do now? Obviously, Tom Cleverley has been appointed interim boss for now, and it's impossible to make a judgment on him because he's never been in this situation before. You can't really pass a comment on him. Whether he gets the job long-term or not, who knows? It's very, very doubtful. But if he does really, really well in his interim stint, and however long it lasts, maybe he'll make a case for himself. But it's unlikely, you would think. But I just feel in two minds about this because Watford obviously are a club that we know under the Pozos are constantly chopping and changing. They're worldwide renowned for it. Everybody knows what they're like. But with Valerian Ismael having given him a new contract so quickly as well, which did feel a little bit premature, let's be honest, with the Watford method, it just sort of feels that they've packed it in at the first sign of trouble. And yeah, they're on a bad run. There's no denying that. They are playing poorly at the minute. They've had some really bad results. But at the same time, is anybody going to come in and make a huge difference with what's available to them? Like you say, Ismael's style had changed in comparison to what we'd seen at Barnsley and West Brom. That was quite unexpected in the way he shifted his style of play. But Watford, of course, they're a team that are, like I said at the beginning of this segment, they are renowned for pushing for the Premier League. And at the moment, it feels as though they're a long way off from doing that. Though, of course, they were in 8th, as I say, in the middle of January. So going to be very interesting to see where they go next, what they do long term, or in Watford's case, 6 months. That probably accounts for long term in the Watford world. But personally, I don't feel overly comfortable with the dismissal of Ismael. Being honest, if I'm sort of being truth be told, I do think maybe he should have at least had to the end of the season. But as a counter argument, you can see why they've made the change with the way results have turned. So bit of a difficult one. Don't think it's overly clear cut either way. Can understand it from one side of the table, but not so keen on it from the other. But Watford will never change, will it? It's just the way they are. So obviously it's not worked out on this occasion, and where they will go next, who knows? But like you said, Watford, they've got a really tough run of games between now and the end of the season. Fair bit of traffic at the minute between them and the bottom three. But with the way that battle's changing every single weekend, they could quite easily get sucked into it, really sucked into it if things don't go the way in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
It feels like the club has run its course a little bit under the Pozzo family, doesn't it? I think there's a lot more content from the supporters towards them. A section of the fans has never been happy with the way they've conducted themselves with the football club. But I think now there's a lot more apathy, a lot more anger starting to grow within the Watford ranks. There's just not a lot to be excited about at the minute. They've got some talent in the squad, but nobody to really get that excited about and hang your hopes on. Yasser Asprey are probably the pick of the bunch, but They've had flashes of form from Kone, from Kayembe. Radulovic has obviously scored some goals at different points in the season, but I don't think he's been a resounding success in terms of his overall performance and displays as far as Watford fans' verdicts go. And it feels like they're just lacking a little bit of a project to believe in and something to really get behind. So Tom Cleverley is going to take the role in interim. Let's see what he can do and see how Watford progress moving forward. Let's take a look now at some of the reaction from the results at the weekend, George. The top of the table has changed yet again with the most dramatic of comebacks for Cardiff City. Four in a row for them now. I went to the Cardiff City Stadium 2.5 weeks ago now and watched probably the worst match I've ever seen between Cardiff and Blackburn Rovers. Two terrible, out-of-form teams that just looked lacking quality. And Cardiff were just as bad as Blackburn, probably a little bit better at times, but just mid-table fodder. Didn't look good. Neither team, and it looked inspired. And then Cardiff have gone and won four games in a row, including one of the most dramatic comebacks. Two goals in stoppage time. First Ryan Wintle and then Callum O'Dowda. Big for him. He's obviously had quite an injury-hit season, but when he's been fit and available, he's been quite impressive and quite important for Errol Bullitt's side. But this for Ipswich is obviously a massive, massive blow. They were on a six-game winning run. Hadn't been at their best, it's fair to say, been a bit of a scrappy game, but got themselves in front with a really nice Kiefer Moore goal. And then you thought they were going to see that over the line and get the results. And they did. Cardiff did to them what they've done to so many teams this season by scoring two late sucker punches. And this could be a really big moment in the title race, in the race for automatic promotion.
It certainly could, but I think first and foremost, got to give a little bit of credit to Cardiff City. They're currently on the longest winning run now in the Championship at four games, which is absolutely remarkable. Well, like you said there, that they were so poor when you saw them against Blackburn not all that long ago. And now all of a sudden they've strung four wins in a row together and they were in with an outside chance of the top six. So it just goes to show that anything can happen in the Championship. So a fantastic result for Cardiff City, it really is. And the way Errol Bullitt over the course of the season has managed that squad and got a tune out of it sort of fairly consistently. I think they've done a lot better than people expected at the start of the season.
There was a worry definitely that with the form line and the way they were performing that the season could really turn into a bit of a, just, you know, they could get on the beach pretty early and it just the season could really fizzle out and a lot of the good will and optimism built in those earlier months was really going to fade out. And turn into anger and frustration and apathy. But instead, they've put this run together. And you know, if we're saying Preston is still in the playoff race, then we've got to say that Cardiff are as well.
Yeah, most definitely. They're only 5 points adrift as we record this episode. They're 11th in the table. And like I was just about to say there, I think Cardiff, realistically, if they were to finish in the top half, I think that would resemble a successful season for them.
I agree.
I think Errol Bullitt's done a really good job over the course of the season there. And it's worth remembering that Cardiff, they did start the season quite well. And you think back all the way to the opening day, they were 2-0 up at Leeds, so nearly won that game as well. So they've certainly had their moments this season. They went to Ipswich away and I think they were 2-0 up in that game and lost 3-2 or were 2-1 up, something like that.
2-0,
and,
right.
You know, they've given a lot of good teams a good run for their money this year. Obviously, they've got Swansea this weekend. Massive, massive game. One of those where, as big as a cliche it is, form can go out the window. Cardiff will certainly fancy their chance of beating their rivals. But as for Ipswich, this feels like a potentially significant juncture in their season, doesn't it? Because not only have they lost, which has obviously been a huge rarity for Ipswich this season, they've only lost 5 in 37 league games, which is remarkable for a newly promoted team. It's remarkable for any team at this level. I think the big thing for Ipswich now, and it's sort of difficult to question their character because how many times have Ipswich come back from problems this season? It's unbelievable. I think it's 28 points gained from losing positions. They've mastered more than anyone else in the league. But when you concede two late goals like that, it can have a significant impact on confidence, morale, and just general mood in the camp. So I think the blessing in disguise for Ipswich is the fact that this has happened with a game to go until the international break and not happen in the final game before the break, when in the sense you've then got a 2 week gap to wait to try and make up for it. They've got Sheffield Wednesday at home this
weekend.
That's
a really good point, actually. I'd not really thought about that in terms of the time. And if I think I completely agree. I think if they'd had 2 weeks to stew on it, that would have been even worse. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I just think it's one of those situations where, say, you go a fortnight then without a game, and you're sort of reflecting on 5 minutes of madness like that, thinking, boy, do I wish we could get out there this weekend, try and put it right. Ipswich, of course, have got that opportunity this weekend, playing Sheffield Wednesday at home. Of course, need the points themselves for different reasons, but we'd just be as determined to get them. But for Ipswich, it's a bit of a setback. There's no denying that. It is a little bit of a setback. But they're still only a point outside the top two. They're still only 4 points behind leaders Leicester City. So it's not a sort of situation where you can think it's disastrous, that's the end of their promotion hopes, because it isn't, not by any stretch. But it's certainly a little bit of a dent, shall we say. So I think it's been interesting to see how they respond. Like I said, I think it's important they've got another game before the break to try and put it right and get back on track. And it's a game that on paper they should be winning. They'll certainly fancy their chances. They've been excellent at home all season, even though nothing's given in this league, as we've seen in recent weeks, with, say, QPR going to Leicester and winning, Millwall going to Southampton and winning. There's nothing to say Sheffield Wednesday can't go there and get a result. But Ipswich will certainly fancy their chances with their home record this year and the amount of goals they've scored at home. But I think Kieran McKenna, he will have sort of said to his players, look, we've had a 5 minute moment here. It's football. It can happen. We've seen many results in the past where just a freak result in a few moments of madness has happened. So I'm pretty confident that Ipswich will bounce back. I think they've got it in them because they've proven time and time again this year they've come back from so many little setbacks where you thought, that's it, that's when they're going to crumble. And they've just come fighting back. You think back to the Rotherham game last month when Rotherham equalised in what was it, the 92nd, 93rd minute. Ipswich straight back up the other end through Omari Hutchinson, score a winner. So they'll certainly be confident they can put it right. And it was just, like I say, one of those games where a few moments of madness, pure euphoria for Cardiff, and it happens. But what a result for Cardiff in the grand scheme of things for their season. That's certainly the whereas in sort of in Ipswich's case, it's going to be sort of a massive dent for them. For Cardiff, what an injection of confidence to win like that against a team going for the top two, and sets them up perfectly for a big game with Swansea. So significant result in both teams' cases last weekend, but for Cardiff, an excellent victory. For Ipswich, hopefully for them, just a dent.
And that had opened the doors to Leeds United. They'd obviously beaten Sheffield Wednesday on Friday night 2-0. Quite an interesting game. I thought Sheffield Wednesday were really good value to be level at half time, only for Leeds to score with the last kick of the game through, well, last kick of the half, should I say, through Patrick Bamford. Lovely cross from Junior Firpo, who's really established himself in the side now after injury in the first half of the season. Whether Leeds United will extend his contract and keep him, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's been a huge success, but he has been a contributor, certainly in the second half of the season for Daniel Farke's side. And I read the statistics last week where of the 10, 20 and 30 game form table, they were top of the league. Well, now they get their opportunity in second to really try and build some momentum further and cement themselves in that top two. Southampton are still in the race as well. They got themselves back in the mix, having had their game obviously postponed against Preston. They beat Sunderland 4-2, a game where they were 2-0 up and cruising. Sunderland came back with one very fortunate goal from Mundell, which took a big deflection, and then a brilliant, brilliant strike from Joe Bellingham. That was actually the youngest ever Championship 11 since the rebrand by Sunderland, according to Transfermarkt, at 22 years. 22.8 was the record before that. So by some distance, the youngest ever team fielded in the Championship by Mike Dodds. And so, you know, six defeats in a row for Sunderland is pretty worrying. Of course it is. And I've seen a few panicking about potential relegation. They're on 47 points. I think they will be absolutely fine. They would need to have a real capitulation. But having won six, not won, you know, having lost six in a row, they're probably feeling like that. But they've got some winnable games coming up. I think they'll be fine. But yeah, Joe Rothwell, another product of their January acquisitions coming on to get the win. I'm really surprised Rothwell hasn't found a more regular starting place. He really should be starting for any team in the Championship, to be honest. And yet he's had some telling contributions. He scored that brace against Huddersfield relatively recently in their fight back at St Mary's, and again, he was crucial coming on to scoring two goals. So Leeds now into second, Ipswich just behind them, and then a couple of points further back is Southampton. So all to play for, still for second place, and a really good weekend for those other two sides chasing the top two, with Leicester, of course, stumbling with a 2-2 draw at Hull City. 1 win in 5 for them, more drop points, and so more twists and turns, and everything still feels very much to play for.
It certainly does. It's certainly not going to be the one-horse race to the title that we all anticipated for majority of the season in Leicester's case. They have stumbled recently, and thank goodness in their case they got that victory at Sunderland in midweek last week, because without that, Leeds would be well on top of them, even closer than they are now. But starting with Leeds, I was at the game against Sheffield Wednesday last Friday night. I thought Leeds were very good. Wednesday, like you say, in the first half, they more than matched Leeds. They contained them really, really well. And they arguably had the better of the chances. But obviously, Leeds, they worked that really good goal right on the stroke of half-time with the cross from Junior Firpo, tucked away from Bamford. And from that moment onwards, obviously, it lifted Leeds. It just dented Wednesday's half-time team talk, which would have been really positive and upbeat. And Leeds in the second half, they just controlled the game. And I just want to say, while touching on Leeds, obviously their form this calendar year has been incredible, absolutely unbelievable, to be quite honest. The fact they're not top is testament to how good Leicester have been over the course of the season, if not recently. But on Leeds, I just want to particularly praise Joe Rodon and Ethan Ampadu. Thought they were absolutely excellent at Sheffield Wednesday last Friday night, in particular Rodon. His reading of the game, the way he stepped up, the way he headed everything that came his way, he just looked an absolute class above and a player that should not be playing in the Championship. He was absolutely excellent. The same can be said for Ampadu as well. Those two as a pairing, they've been absolute colossuses at the back.
I think we would have said Ampadu's probably been one of the best midfielders in the Championship, and then he's been moved from there to play centre-half, and he's not... They've not missed him. You know, the midfield's not skipped a beat. Gruev spoke about on last week's podcast, has come in and done a fantastic job. And Ampadu just looks just as comfortable there as he does in the heart of midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Gruev has stepped up really well. Him and Glenn Kamara, they've formed a good pivot at the base of midfield. And with Rodon and Ampadu behind, and you've got a bank of four there in a sense, in a square shape that's just spot on to deal with anything that comes their way. So Daniel Farke certainly played a masterstroke with that one. You think across that back line, Archie Gray, a midfielder by trade, he's playing right back as well. So technically, you've only really got half of that back four playing in their natural positions in Rodon and Junior Firpo. So big credit to Daniel Farke for that. You've got and the amount of clean sheets they've racked up as well is testament to it, to be fair. They've only conceded three goals since the turn of the year, which is absolutely incredible. As for Southampton, like you said, they did it the hard way, shall we say, against Sunderland. Obviously, 2-0 up, Sunderland brought it back, then they got another couple of goals. And that's the thing with the Russell Martin team now. For all of their control of possession, they don't seem to do straightforward, easy wins anymore. It's always seems to be hard. They obviously had to battle against Huddersfield, battled a 7-goal thriller at Birmingham, battled a 6-goal thriller here against Sunderland. So they're certainly becoming a little bit more erratic in their defensives. Yeah, chaotic, erratic. It's not the sort of as controlled. And you think back to after the Bristol City game, when that long unbeaten run came to an end, Russell Martin said a few days later after his side had beaten West Brom that the Bristol City game was like a basketball match. Didn't like it, didn't want to see it again. And it seems to have been a trend that's setting in the last few weeks where obviously it's been end to end, goals flying in for either side. So that's certainly an element of concern for him that Southampton are not as tight defensively. But if they're scoring goals and getting 3 points on the board, however they do it at this stage of the season, it doesn't really matter whether you're winning 1-0, 4-3, 4-2, whatever. As long as you're getting those maximum points, then you've certainly got to get it in the bag. But personally, I still think Leeds and Leicester will be my two, even though you can't dismiss Ipswich at the moment. Southampton, of course, a game in hand against Preston, who played in April. They're still in the equation. You certainly can't dismiss them. But there's just a little bit of a gap for them to claw back. 6 points on Leeds at the minute, 5 on Ipswich, whereas Ipswich obviously only a point behind Leeds, and it's much easier to overtake them.
They have a game in hand, though, of course, against Preston, although that's not going to be played until mid-April.
Yeah, April. April it is. And I think Leeds, Ipswich, and both sides, and Leicester as well, I think if all three of them could be all promoted automatically, they deserve it. There's a very, very strong likelihood that Leeds and Ipswich are both going to tick over 90 points and one of them isn't going to get automatic promotion. Southampton quite possibly could achieve it as well. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. So we could end this season where potentially we've got four teams over 90 points, and that would of course be unprecedented at this level. So it's really, really hard. You can't dismiss Ipswich yet. You can't rule Southampton out yet. But I just think the form that Leeds are in at the moment, they just look so classy and so comfortable and assured. Confidence flowing through their veins. Elland Road, of course, has been a fortress. And obviously Leeds, they know full well that if they win this weekend, they go into the international break, top of the pile, with Leicester being FA Cup duty against Chelsea on Sunday. So it's a big opportunity for Leeds. And we've mentioned there about Ipswich's confidence possibly being dented by that Cardiff result, had it been going into the international break. For Leeds, if they go into the break top of the league, that's going to do wonders for confidence and momentum over that two-week hiatus. And I always sort of view the March international break as the final chance to rest up before the last sprint to the finish line.
The running.
Once we come back. TM. That is the running. Once we come back on Good Friday, and it feels weird that we're sort of coming straight back into it, Easter weekend, that weekend.
So you meet early this year, isn't it, Easter? There's usually a match day between the international break and then the Easter.
Yeah, Easter Sunday is March the 31st this year. We play on Good Friday the 29th, and we've got a whole host of games on Easter Monday, April the 1st. So that always feels like a pivotal weekend. It's one of those weekends where the clocks change, the sun comes out, stays lighter.
You know, hey, Dingo Dart, I went to walk my dog at about 6 o'clock tonight and it was still light.
Yeah, we're getting there. Winter's finally coming to an end. It's so depressing, isn't it? But like I said, the Easter weekend, it's just one of those pivotal weekends where so much can happen in 72 hours. You think back to the last season. Obviously, Burnley got promoted on Good Friday last year, winning away at Middlesbrough. There was a bit of a titanic clash with Millwall and Luton. There's just so much that can happen. And the Easter weekend, for me, it's better than the Christmas round, because I think you're approaching that business end. Every result just means that.
Are you jumping on my Easter weekend hype?
I am. I know you. I know it's your favourite weekend of the year. I'm going to join you on that obsession.
Trying to steal my thing.
But yeah, it is a good weekend. But like you said, it is unusual that we're going straight sort of out of the break and then into that. But for this weekend, looking at that in isolation, for Leeds, a huge opportunity to go top of the pile, knowing that 3 points will do it. So a big, big chance for them. And I think personally at home to Millwall, even though Millwall have been on a good run of late, I think Leeds' home record and the confidence flowing through their veins at the minute might just carry them over the line in that one and send them into the hiatus top of the table. But of course, they don't play till Sunday. If Ipswich win on Saturday against Sheffield Wednesday, they go into second. So potentially Leeds could jump two places with one win. So all to play for. Still very, very, very difficult to call. But it's exciting, isn't it? I think we can say that at the very least.
For the first time in a couple of weeks, it wasn't the most bonkers weekend of the season at the bottom of the Championship. It was a very good win. Sorry, it was a very good weekend for Millwall and Stoke City, who both won. Stoke seemed to have been galvanised somewhat by dropping into the bottom three with back-to-back wins against Middlesbrough and then winning 2-1 at Deepdale. The most scruffy of winners you're ever likely to see with the ball cannoning off the shins of Luke McNally and somehow trickling into the bottom corner past Freddie Woodman. They seem to have been really galvanised by dropping into the bottom three, actually. It was interesting to see how they react, whether dropping to the bottom three was the start of a spiral even further down, or whether that kind of felt like they'd hit rock bottom. And it's been the latter, in fairness. They have responded in the last few matches, getting some vital points on the board. So they're out of the bottom three now. Huddersfield Town have dropped into it. And Millwall winning 1-0 very late on against Birmingham to make it 10 points out of 12 under Neil Harris, a header from Japhet Tanganga, winning the points for Millwall. So big weekend for those two teams. Birmingham, not a very good couple of games. They, of course, lost in midweek against Middlesbrough in the only midweek game that was played. So they're in a bit of trouble. Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield and QPR are all beaten as well. What are you thinking at the bottom of the table at the minute? I have to say, concern's got to be grown for Birmingham City at the moment, because they are not looking like, you know, the away form's not been good for a while. But without Tony Mowbray, even the games at home, they're really, really struggling. And they were, by all accounts, really poor against Middlesbrough in the week. They've got a massive game on Saturday against Watford, which really has got to be a game they're targeting 3 points from, because Watford are obviously bang out of form. So if Birmingham can't sort themselves out, they could be in some real trouble, and they are obviously just a place above the relegation zone and only a point above it as well. So with Tony Mowbray still obviously getting better, Mark Venus sort of, you know, admitting that they're really missing him, This group's really got to galvanise quickly because they are probably the team in the last week where I've developed more concern, because I've always been quite adamant Birmingham were going to get out of it, but all the form guides and all the fingers are pointing to a fair bit of trouble going on at St Andrews.
They are indeed. They seem to have been sucked into it, even though they've been down there, but they seem to have sort of been sucked into immediate danger quite quickly. They've obviously had a really bad run in the last few weeks, and Tony Mowbray's health concerns, though of course they take priority, have certainly not helped matters. It's been a blow for Birmingham. They're bound to have felt it. And of course, we continue to wish Tony Mowbray all the very best. But I look at Birmingham's next few games, and their running does consist of sort of a mixed bag of fixtures. I look at the next three in particular, taking us up to including Easter Monday, that really feel pivotal. Their next three are Watford at home, QPR away on Good Friday, Preston at home on Easter Monday. That QPR game could be absolutely enormous for so many teams at the bottom, the outcome of that. Everybody else will be praying for a draw. And then beyond that, Birmingham, in among other games, they've got to go to Leicester. They've got to play Coventry at home. They've still got to play Norwich as well. But at the same time, they've also still got games against Rotherham and Huddersfield. So there is opportunities for Birmingham coming up, even though there are one or two games where you sort of don't fancy them. So they've got a bit of a mixed bag. They've got to take comfort and confidence from that they've got games coming up that they've got to look at and sort of think, yeah, these are winnable. We go into these, play our best football, we should be able to get something. So it is really difficult, though, at the minute, because their form has been really, really poor. Let's be truthful. They obviously, they lost to Southampton at the very, very end, but they did get a creditable point at Hull. Hull obviously scoring a very, very dubious goal through Ozan Toufan that shouldn't have stood. Millwall, obviously, they beat him in the last minute. Southampton beat him in the last minute. So it is fine margins, really, for Birmingham. There's been some very fine margins, and there's not really been any sort of games in there where they've been battered. They've been very slender defeats.
Even at Ipswich, so, relatively recently, they were competitive for large portions
of
the game.
They lost 3-1, and let's not forget, that was 2-1 up until the 93rd, 94th minute, whatever it was. So they've certainly been in games, and they're not sort of getting hammered by anybody. But, of course, they're not winning games either, so that's a problem. Stoke City as well, moving on to them. It does feel like dropping into the bottom three has been a bit of a wake-up call, giving them a bit of a kick up the backside and sort of said, right, this is real now. Sort of shit's hit the fan, and you think, crikey, we could drop into League One here. Two wins in three games, and even sandwiched between that 1-0 defeat at Elland Road against Leeds, really didn't look like that bad a result, only losing 1-0. Of course, Stoke didn't want to lose that game, but only a 1-0 defeat doesn't sound all that bad, as crazy as that might sound. But to go to Preston and win, that was a big result, because Preston have been pretty decent in the last few weeks. They picked up some good results and have re-established a bit of a playoff hunt. So to go there and get the win, obviously beat Middlesbrough, who, since losing at Stoke, have churned out three wins in a row themselves. So it was a good weekend for Stoke and Millwall, like you say. Blackburn and Plymouth obviously cancelled each other out with a draw.
I said before the weekend, didn't I, that whichever team didn't get the win would be sent into meltdown, and it's kind of neither has really, because Blackburn not great, but Plymouth, I think the performance they were. By the way, Plymouth should have absolutely won that game. They were the better team by far. Even before the red card, they wasted a lot of chances. And I was really encouraged, actually, by the way Plymouth played. So if they play like that throughout the course of the season, there's no way they'll get relegated. Obviously, doing that consistently has been a problem. So I think Plymouth fans, although they'll be annoyed they didn't win, I think the performance will have given them a lot of heart. For Blackburn, obviously, it's another game without a victory under John Eustace. So a lot of concern still. And then further worry added to them this week by, on Thursday, documents released from the High Court of Delhi confirming that the application from Venky's to push through funding for Blackburn Rovers, which had already been adjourned once from January, so they'd already had a six-week delay, has now been delayed by 5 months. So Blackburn Rovers in a real perilous position on and off the field in what was already a massive task to keep them in the championship. So they're in a lot of trouble. I think Plymouth will be... I think it's done a lot, that performance, just to hopefully appease some of the fans, because there was growing pressure on Ian Foster.
Yeah, there was. I saw Plymouth 3 or 4 days before you saw them when they came to Sheffield Wednesday, and They were very, very poor that night. I've got to be honest. Wendy fully deserved
it. They were really good.
Yeah, I've seen the highlights and they did look certainly a lot more expansive and a lot more vibrant than they did at Hillsborough a few days earlier. But looking at the sort of the bigger picture at the bottom and the way it's shaping up, I still think it's very, very difficult to call. I just don't think at this point in time you can cast a firm sort of prediction on who are going to be the last two to go down. Obviously, along with Rotherham. Rotherham are dead and buried. They're gone at this rate. They might even score a goal again this season with how bad they've been. But I think you look at it and Sheffield Wednesday have obviously come from a position where they've been doing all the chasing for the whole season. They're probably the ones most glad to be in this position in the sense they've actually got a chance of getting out of it. The Leeds result, it was one of those where you sort of predicted beforehand they were very unlikely to get anything from that game. They gave a good account of themselves for the majority of the game, simply beaten by a better team. They didn't do anything wrong. Leeds were just better. I think for Wednesday, they've got to take comfort from the fact that they've won five of their last seven. The only two defeats in that run were against the current top two. So that's got to give them confidence. Obviously, Ipswich away this weekend, another very difficult game.
So it's a really big weekend for Huddersfield coming up, I think. Having been in front against West Brom, 1-0 up, to play pretty well in that first half, to then get battered in the way they did, and the goals obviously came really quick fire, but West Brom absolutely blew them away in that second half. And then they go away to Rotherham this weekend. If they don't win at Rotherham, that is a big concern. And I do think they've been playing all right under Andre Brighton right since he's come in. But that second half performance will be a bit of a blow with the way West Brom just completely turned the game on its head to win 4-1 at the Johnstone Stadium. So it's got to be 3 points for them at Rotherham this weekend.
It has to be. Anything other than 3 points at Rotherham and they've got a serious problem. There's no doubt about it. Rotherham are a team at the moment that are fast becoming, well, not fast, but they have become the whipping boys of the division. They've lost the last two games by 5 goals apiece. Conceding 8 goals in the first halves alone of those two matches combined.
Even their better players like Victor Johansson's chucked in a few wobblies over the last couple of weeks, a couple of mistakes.
Yeah. You can see that that's a fractured, broken squad now. They know that the race is run. They're probably sort of thinking, can we just get to the finish line and get this over with? They need to claw back as many points as they've won this season, in the whole of the season, just to get level with Sheffield Wednesday. And that isn't going to happen. We just know that. So for Huddersfield, it is a massive, massive game. And Huddersfield have got, arguably, three of their next four are all absolutely enormous. With the exception of playing Coventry at home on Good Friday, after that, they've got Stoke away on Easter Monday. Then the following Saturday, April the 6th, they've got Millwall at home. So they've got three enormous games within their next four. So for the Terriers, I think their fixture list, certainly on paper, is quite favourable. They've still got to play Birmingham as well, as I mentioned earlier on. They've got to play Swansea, who are not too far ahead of them. The only sort of massive challenge they've still got is Ipswich away on the final day. So the fixture list in Huddersfield's favour is quite favourable. Theirs looks one of the easiest on paper. But of course, we know the game isn't played on paper. And of course, I say that Huddersfield looks easiest looking at the teams of sort of playing Swansea, Stoke, Birmingham. Those three clubs will be thinking exactly the same playing Huddersfield. So it's going to be a really difficult one. But just before we move on away from Huddersfield, I think we just need to take a moment to appreciate the quality of Okai Okoslu's strike last Sunday for West Bromwich Albion. I'm not a West Brom fan, but I've lost count of how many times I've watched that goal. And I don't care what anybody says. Daniel Mann being on the commentary made it 10 times better. What
could
a
you,
goal that was.
Could you do me a Andy Gray, what a hit, son, what a hit, please?
No. I'm not going to embarrass myself
with that. What
a hit, son! No. Really, don't do that again. Okay. Please don't do that again.
Okay. Well, what came into my mind when he absolutely pegged that into the
walloped
top corner,
it.
Literally lifting the goal off
it. It was an unbelievable goal.
Yes, but, that was a very, very good football. Very good football.
Mikey Johnston, by the way, what a sign he's been. What an impact.
Yeah,
it's been remarkable.
Absolutely bonkers. Why is he not playing for Celtic? I don't have no idea.
Who knows? But sort of just back to the, very briefly, back to the bottom before we move on.
QPR,
I still think
team we've not touched on, losing at home to Middlesbrough. They've got a really big game. Tell you what, they could win this weekend at Sunderland. Sunderland obviously bang out of form, as we've touched on.
Yeah.
They weren't horrific certainly against possible. Middlesbrough in a game that was quite tight. Not at their best QPR, I think. But yeah, they will see the Sunderland game as a chance to get back on the horse.
Yeah, they will. And I think for QPR, and it just sort of sums up the Championship and the mental nature of it, is that on the Saturday, they go to Leicester and win. Then they draw 2-2 with West Brom, and then they lose at home to Middlesbrough. Just when you think the Leicester win had spear them on to get in another sort of 3 or maybe 6 points in the next two, they regress, even though they should have beaten West Brom. I watched that game and they were absolutely excellent. And like you said, they didn't do an awful lot wrong against Borough. So I think for Martí Cifuentes, he'll be a little bit disappointed with how it's gone. But Sunderland away, it's a good opportunity at the very least to head into the pause with 3 points, isn't it? So they'll be looking at that. But again, I still think you look at the table and you could probably go as far as Swansea, maybe even Watford, and suggest they're still in danger of being dragged in. So it feels like another pivotal weekend with a 2 week break to come. And the fans of those clubs that are going to spend the 2 week break in the bottom three will probably be a little bit more anxious ahead of the restart come Easter weekend. But you look at it, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich away, it's another big game for Wednesday. You just wonder, is it a case of Leeds and Ipswich back-to-back? Is it going to derail their momentum a little bit? But having said that, say, if they do lose at Ipswich, it would still be 5 wins in 8 games, which when Wednesday fans looked at that run of games, they would have taken at the beginning of it. So you can view it in all different kinds of ways. Wednesday, again, like Huddersfield, have got some favourable-looking games coming up after Easter. Certainly after the international break anyway. Swansea at home on Good Friday certainly feels pivotal as a game they need to try and win. Still got to play Stoke, still got to go to Blackburn. And then you mentioned earlier on, Plymouth looked a lot better against Blackburn last weekend. Can they sort of build on that? Can they sustain it? Because I saw them a few days earlier and I thought they were really poor. So it's really, really hard to gauge. But of the teams sort of above that dotted line at the minute, I'd probably say it's Birmingham, Blackburn, that I'm most worried about, for obvious reasons. In Blackburn's case, with the longevity of this really, really bad run of form that they find themselves on.
19, and, if you wonder.
And of course, they've probably got the hardest running to come of the teams in this section of the table. So they've still got to play all of the top four, which is going to be a big, big ask, especially when they've got to go to Leeds, got to go to Leicester. Of course, the Championship can throw up some surprises, we've seen in recent weeks. I mentioned Millwall winning at Southampton, QPR win at Leicester. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. But I think the big worry for Blackburn is that they've only got one man who can put the ball in the net. Say if he gets injured or whatever, then you worry even more, because Sammy Smodics, the reliance on him is just becoming... It's really worrying, to be fair. So, you know, come back to me again next week or whatever and we'll discuss it again. And my perception may change once again. But at the minute, as I said last week, I just think until we get down to sort of the 4 or 5 games left mark, it is impossible to make a firm verdict. It's so, so tight down there.
Very quickly on the battle for the playoffs, Norwich are into 6th for the first time in a long time. They've been fantastic, particularly at Carrow Road, scoring 2 absolute worldies. Which was better, Borja Sainz, who only scores screamers, by the way, or Gabriel Sara with an absolutely so aesthetically pleasing volley into the top corner? Which one was better in the 5-0 win over Rotherham?
Very difficult to say, but from my point of view and the way that I see a goal looking more aesthetically pleasing, I'd probably have to go for Gabriel Sara's. That was an unbelievable strike. Sainz was excellent as well.
I think that's the purest response, Sara. I have got a lot of time for Borja Sainz's strike. It's a really, really fantastic goal and really, really good for them. They're obviously in the driving seat for 6th now. Hull City drew with Leicester, as we've spoken about. Cardiff, are they in the running now after 4 wins? Middlesbrough, 3 wins in a row as well, maybe have kept their season alive. Preston obviously losing at home to... at home to Stoke was a bit of a hammer blow. So a couple of teams, I think I officially said that Sunderland, Middlesbrough and Cardiff seasons were over last week. Well, a couple of wins, well, 2 wins in Borough's case and a win for Cardiff, maybe just put a bit more life into their campaigns.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, it's probably gone a little bit unnoticed because they've been there or thereabouts for much of the season. Coventry have closed that gap in the last couple of weeks. It was about five or six points.
They stumbled a little
ago.
Bit, didn't they? After Sakamoto got injured, but then they've bounced back with a couple of back-to-back wins last week.
Yeah, beat Rotherham, beat Watford, and now all of a sudden they're a point behind both Norwich and Hull. And Hull are a weird one because they're seven games unbeaten, but they're four games without a victory. So they're just stumbling a little bit.
I'm still not sold on Hull, 100%.
No, I'm not. Norwich have been excellent at home, but have stumbled away from home at times. But I think the big advantage for Norwich is now that they've got Josh Sargent back and he is firing on all cylinders, banging the goals in.
The form of Cararoli is unbelievable to say how poor it was at the start
electric.
Of the season.
I think they've got the third best record at home in the Championship this season now. It's unbelievable the transformation they're home for.
They've won seven and drawn one, or whatever it is. They've drawn one anyway and won the rest of their home games in 2024.
Yeah, they've been absolutely excellent since the turn of the year. They really have. They've stepped it up and done so, so well. And then you always have in the back of your mind that thought that is one team going to sort of come from nowhere, make that late dart inside the final 10 games? Middlesbrough all of a sudden have gone from sort of being on the beach thinking their season's done, they've not really got anything to play for now, they're not going up, they're not going down, they're going to be steady in the middle of the pack. Where all of a sudden now, three wins on the bounce, in the space of 7 days, has propelled them into a position where they're not quite knocking on the door, but they're threatening to begin the process of knocking. Yeah, they pull onto the drive. That's one way of putting it. I think that does sum it up, really, what I was trying to say. So they're certainly in the mix. Cardiff as well, like I said, remarkably, they're now on the longest winning run in the division of four games. They've got to be considered at the minute. I still think they're outsiders. I'm not going to deny that. I do think they're outsiders. And,
agreed.
You know, I think of the teams, and I think we're probably, even though the points gap to seventh is only 5 points currently, and that could quickly be wiped out, I think we're generally of the opinion that West Brom are going to bag fifth place. It feels like they've been in that position for absolutely ages. And personally, I think they will retain that position to the finish line. So if we're sort of saying there's one spot remaining, the top four.
I'll tell you how we'll do this, George.
George, Stone.
Top three. I don't want anything other than names of football clubs. Who are the top three teams most likely to finish in sixth? And I'll give mine as well.
In sixth, I'm going to go with Coventry, Norwich and Hull.
I completely agree with that order. And that would also be my order as well.
And Hang on. I just want to mark this. I want to mark this date in my diary. We have actually agreed on something.
I think so. I think
that doesn't happen very often.
I think there's flaws in each of the teams, but I think that would be my order as well. I think Norwich just above Hull.
I just think Hull City, though they've got a lot of talent on that pitch, they've spent quite a bit of money. They've spent quite a bit of money to assemble it in January. I just don't think they look as electric as they should be, if that makes sense. I think with Coventry, who of course spent money themselves this season, there's no escaping that. A lot of Hull fans will sort of say, you're piling on us, saying we've spent all the money. You have spent a lot of money in January. They did spend heavily in investing in wages for loanees in particular. Coventry, of course, they spent money last summer, but that was obviously generated by the sales of Victor Gyökeres and Gustavo Hama. But I think as Coventry, and certainly in the last few weeks, Mark Robbins has started to get more of a tune out of Ellis Sims. Had you right, his numbers have gone up quite sharply, very quickly. So they've certainly got individuals like Hull, match winners, flair players that can do that. Norwich, it's just the away form that sort of concerns me a little bit, because at Carrow Road, they're absolutely faultless. But it's like last week when they went to Middlesbrough and lose 3-1, where at that point, Borough were in a really bad run of form. That sort of was one of those results that sort of in my brain sort of said, this is why they might miss out. Just those little
early red
like
card
that.
In that one, slight mitigation.
Yes, of course, and Borja Sainz got it overturned, of course, so he could play at the weekend. So I think Coventry, even though they're eighth at the minute, albeit only a point off sixth, I still think they could be best equipped, because it feels like they've just started to turn a little bit of a corner again. So I think Coventry, as I said earlier on in the season, will finish in the top six again. I'm adamant that West Brom will retain fifth place. I think they will finish there. I don't think they're going to be sort of in a position where they're going to storm and catch Southampton, 10-point gap at the minute. And I don't think they're going to be caught by that many of those chasing behind them. So I think they'll be steady to the finish line and get a fifth spot, which I think they richly deserve, to be fair, because they've been there all season, give or take. So I still think Coventry for sixth, but can you dismiss Cardiff? Certainly not yet. Can't dismiss Preston, Borough as well. So it feels like one of six get that sixth spot, but you've certainly got a little bit of a divide within that six where you've got three that are probably very, very likely.
And then they're at the door, maybe, and the other three are on the drive still.
On the drive, maybe not even on the drive yet.
It's going to have to be a wide driveway to fit three cars in, if we're being honest.
It would, but yeah. So at this point, maybe we're in a position to perhaps say only Sunderland and Bristol City have got nothing to play for. Maybe it's just those two.
What? Maybe we should stop saying that, given two of the teams are put in that bracket of now.
Why don't we just end it here and just say the only team we've got nothing to play for is Rotherham because they're already gone.
Yeah,
maybe that's easier.
What a lovely way to end the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Not always nice to end on a high, isn't it? Sorry, Rotherham fans, but you know that is. Let's be honest. That is probably the most guaranteed thing that is going to happen in this position. Now that they're not going to get anywhere close to matching Wednesday, Huddersfield, Birmingham, those sort of teams. But as for the rest of the table, who the hell knows? It's absolutely bonkers, and this is why, going back to our main topic at the top of the show, the Championship is the best league in the world.
Beautifully put, George, and we will be here to cover every single step. 9 games to go, 9 cup finals, international break coming, which means we'll have 8 big games squeezed into a 6-week period, and we're going to love every second here on the Championship Chat podcast. Please make sure you are subscribed to this podcast feed where you can get all of your podcasts from, and follow us on Twitter at ChampChatPod24. And a huge thank you again to our sponsors, Cards Accepted, for supporting the podcast this season. If you're looking to take card payments with no contract or monthly fees, make sure you check them out at cardsaccepted.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of the Championship Chat Podcast.
This is the Championship Chat Podcast, your home of news, views, and debate from England's second tier.